And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 838. Coming at you on a Tuesday night. Going to talk some positions the next few episodes here. We're going to start with shortstops this evening. It's one of the positions that most people think is the deepest, which technically it probably is. But there's levels to this position that we will talk about. We'll talk about some strategy and much, much more. And to help me do that, it's a friend of mine. He's been on the show, I think, one time before. It should be more than that by now, but it's my fault on that one. I had the pleasure of drafting with him. Someday his boss will let him take vacation to go to Vegas. Not this year, but someday. He's an OC wizard. He's a drafting. He's just great in fantasy in general, but we talked 12s with him before. You can find him on Twitter at TheHumanRainDelay, but it's not spelled that way. You got to figure it out. Mr. Brandon Waddell, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Bubba. Thanks for having me on again. Talking a little positional preview with the shortstops to get things kicked off, and looking forward to it. I've got a bunch of drafts under my belt, so I know the various pockets, and I know it's a very loaded position and something you can't get left behind in.
Yep, no, that's why I think it's a good one to kick it off with. And I know you've been drafting most of the offseason, like myself and a few others, and you do the slow draft approaches, which we'll talk about in just a second because I do want to get your thoughts on that. I've heard you on some other shows and you're crushing. Like, I texted you the other day, I was listening to, I might have been yesterday. You jumped on the live OC draft with Waxman and Timothy, who's in the Discord with us as well on Patreon, and I was thoroughly entertained because I've streamed a lot of drafts and you could just go pick by pick or whatever. But you guys, I enjoyed it because it was more just like there was strategy and players at the same time. A lot of that going on. So kudos to you on that one. How many drafts have you done so far?
All right. So like I said, I got six OCs under my belt, and then I've done two other 15s. One was the Bubba Bloom Auction League that I was in. Obviously a little unique there with the auction style. And then I did the 15-team barf draft that you were also involved in a couple weeks ago. I think it was February 20th, 22nd. So it's been about 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks since that draft happened. But yeah, those are my only two 15s for the year. The rest is going to be 12 teamers.
Yes. That's what I'll give you a lot of credit for, is you stick to your guns on not mixing and matching too much, which is smart. And because like for me, and I don't want to speak for you, I'll let you speak on it here in a second. Going back and forth in that on that Sunday evening for Fab can be quite tricky / annoying. So like you're doing two 15s and the rest 12s. How do you approach the two different leagues?
Yeah, the 15s are not as serious, you know, dollar entry wise. I take them as serious. I try to compete and, you know, try to win. I got lucky to win my Bubba Bloom Auction League last year. We'll see how this one does. There were two wildly different approaches between last year and this year as far as money spent. This year is a much more balanced approach. Last year I went more stars and scrubs. And then barf, I think I was toggling between fourth and fifth with Justin Mason. I think he nipped me towards the end of the year last week or so. But it's just the glaring difference is just the depth of the free agent pool. And I mean, I look at my 15 team fab leagues and I'm just like, I don't want to add anybody on my 12 teamers that I have available in my 15 teamers. Because there's 90 players that are already taken at the draft day, right? And then plus you get a ton of injuries pre-draft. So there's another probably 20 guys that go on the first fab, if not more. And so it just gets depleted more and more throughout the season. And you really are just kind of pulling guys off the trash heap and just trying to get at bats. Whereas in 12s, you have to thrive. The guys you add in fab have to be players. They have to be playing every day or almost every day. The pitchers have to be, you know, something better than a 4 ERA and a 1-2 whip, or you're falling behind. So it's just a different strategy and a different mindset. And that's why I try to stick to the 12s. It kind of keeps my mind in one place and going in one direction the whole season.
Yeah, that's one reason why I really love the 12s as well. Like, I'm playing, I guess, a couple more 15s than usual because I'm just addicted to auctions now, which is awesome. But if I'm doing snakes, for the most part, I prefer to do a 12 like you would. And a lot of it comes down to, for me, it's like you said, when I get sit down to do fab, I want options. I want to be able to know I can do something and not completely, I don't know if regret's the right word, but just start getting, you know, like your skin crawls having to make a pick. And even though you want nothing to do with this player, like you said, in a 12 team league. One thing I know that you've been doing, because you've been drafting, you said six already, You've been doing some of those slow OCs, I believe. How are you liking those compared to the actual like live on the clock snake drafts?
Yeah, I did two slows and I've done four fasts. I like the slows. I think the very first one I did, or maybe my first two, were slow. Just kind of dip my toes in the water. Also keeps me behind pace because I do like to draft early. I do think it's an advantage for me personally. I don't know if other people feel the same way, but I just feel like you get combos. It's like drafting underdog early, right? You try for that closing line value. And I feel like I get some really good closing line value drafting early versus drafting late. I don't do a ton of prep. Like, I'm not sitting here just like, you know, like some of the guys who are really big players in the space. They're doing deep dives and, you know, every possible player in the pool for their auctions and their 15 teamers. Mine kind of comes about more organically, listening to podcasts, listening to, you know, positional reviews, you know, that you and Bloom do. And then, you know, talk with a couple of buddies who do a bunch of DCs. So I get a kind of a feel for what draft positions, you know, what players are going in what positions, how much pitching is getting pushed up, how much closers are getting pushed up, especially this year, it's been insane. And I kind of try to craft a strategy from there. And you can kind of see it play out with some slow OCs, and you kind of just see who's out there and who's valuing, you know, what players at what rounds and stuff.
Yeah, and I like that. That's a good way to go about it, I think. Use those slow OCs to kind of learn. It's like, you know, some of us do DCs or NFBC 50s for that same idea, but I get to the point now where it's like by round, I'll give it to at least round 40, or I'm just like, okay, I'm over this now. I'm never going to use, I hope to not use most of these guys as the draft goes on. Where at least in your OCA, you have more skin in the game at that point. You know, you can fix things if, since you're drafting early, if a problem does occur via injury or if you have Jurickson Profar or something like that. But it also gets you kind of familiar with the playing pool, like you said, familiar with, like some people use gladiators for the same thing, I guess, but it's 15s, mm-hmm. not 12s, same concept. So I like that idea. You do a couple slows, then you know what you're doing. You got your reps, you get into it. How many more drafts are you looking to do this year since you've already gone early and you kind of just said you prefer to draft early compared to late?
Yeah, so right now I've already paid for three more OCs. So I bought a 9-pack at the very beginning of draft season, take advantage of the discount, and then signed up for 1750 OC, which is, I think, set for the 24th of March and already full. And then I've got two 250s already paid for that I'm just waiting for the fast drafts to kick in for those to do those.
Okay, that answers my question because I should have just asked you off air, but hey, we're here. I was texting with Bloomfield because I know when I talked to you on my show last year and we've talked off air and everything is those standalone leagues. Like, so you're talking about the 250s, the 12 team standalone leagues. I love those. And I know you've started to be, I'm saying like you've become more of a fan, but you like kind of for the bankroll management aspect of getting them. Cause we talked about like, I like them cause they pay out three places. OCs only play out two. You don't have to worry about stuff going to the overall. So there's actually more in the pool in theory. There's a lot of factors to that for the bankroll building part to it. So that answers my question. I keep logging in, looking at the lobby, and I'm like, there's nothing out there. Like, when are they going to start posting our standalone leagues? That makes sense now that you say that. Okay.
So they just cut off the slow OCs last Friday. They're cutting off the slow DCs on the 12th. So I think kind of once they get another week in, you know, they'll just be like, okay, slows are done. Yeah, they don't have any fast 250 standalone 12 teams even posted in the lobby when you click on games. All it shows you is a 2-hour or a 4-hour slow, and I just don't want to do those anymore because guys just stall the clock and they wait to, you know, luck box some injury news while it's their pick, and that stuff just pisses me off, and I don't want to wait. So, again, in January, perfectly fine. Not a lot of news. You know, and you're kind of taking your time researching players anyways, but I stopped doing 4-hour slows. I don't have any hair to rip out, but I wanted to rip my hair out doing them. So, and 1 hour is just too fast because I work and I can, there's so many guys that are on the East Coast that when I wake up at 6:30, I think the timer re-engages at 6 a.m. West Coast time. And when I wake up at 6:30, there's already been like 10 picks because everybody, I could tell at like 7 o'clock, the draft room goes quiet.
Yeah, they're all asleep.
And there's maybe one pick that happens between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. West Coast time, which is the cutoff at night. And then, you know, like I said, pops back in at six, and there's been a bunch of picks already made. And then, you know, I work 8 or 9 hours every day. So one hour, you can miss picks, and I don't want to miss picks. It's stupid.
Yep, I'm with you. No, we're on the same page on that one. Like, especially come March, it's like, okay, I'm ready to draft. Let's just get in. Let's see where it goes. Yeah. So, yeah, and that's one thing I remember last year when I got back from Vegas. It was like there's like a week or so left before the season, and I want to bench a couple quick drafts. So if they could open up some of those 250s that last week, which I hope they do, I'll probably see you in there. It sounds like, but that'll be good. So I can play for second. So a couple questions before we talk shortstops here, though, is since you have been drafting and you kind of hinted at it a second ago, it's a question I've asked everybody just because the closing prices are insane. Like at first it was like, okay, it's DCs. This is what happens and it'll change. And then it hasn't changed yet. So then it becomes, okay, this is the market. And, you know, in the world, the market, you either play you are a part of the market or you find a way around it somehow. I don't know how, but how are you approaching the closing market these days in these 12 team leagues?
So I usually don't pay up. I like getting an RP1, but I'm not paying third round price. I'm definitely not paying a second round price. I just don't think when you look at it at the end of the season, I don't think the earned auction value or your return on investment is there. Especially early, like I was going through all my drafts, seeing where I actually took my first closer in my first couple drafts. And I think the earliest was round 8 with Helsley. My very first draft, I think it was, I don't know. I just kept liking players, you know, more so than any RP that was available. And I ended up with Pagan and Abner Uribe. But Sir Anthony Dominguez and Brian Abreu didn't get drafted in those drafts, right? Because they were in early January. So, you know, part of that thought process is, you know, you hope a closer emerges and then you hope you can bid enough, right? So there is two factors. You're like, okay, you know, Hader got hurt. Sir Anthony got signed. You still have some unsettled spots, but, you know, I don't think anything that's going to make a huge difference, but those guys could be difference makers. Like Abreu could get 20, 25 saves in half to two thirds of a season. And if Hader's out all season, he could get 40. Like we know the guy's amazing. And we just assume Sir Anthony's going to close because they gave him $10 million a year. And, you know, the guy's got good stuff. So, you know, in those leagues, that my very first one specifically, I'll be in on those guys. You know, well, do I have to bid 300, 400, 500? I don't know. I usually don't like spending that much, especially in OCs. You have to just add so many guys throughout the season that you need to have some funds available in FAB. But the only one I've paid up for is I did pay up for Edwin Diaz in my most recent, the Waxman one. And that's what I had the 11th pick. I felt like that was pretty good value at the end of the 11th round, or the end of the third round at pick 11. I didn't really like anything else that was available hitter wise. So it's like I took Edwin Diaz and then Johan Duran went right after me. So I don't know if Team 12 would have double tapped closer, but after that it was, you know, Cade Smith, Andres Munoz. I had taken Crochet 1. So I already liked, you know, my starting pitcher. I obviously took a hitter for my second round player. I think it took Tatis. And then I was like, all right, well, I'll take 100 Ks and 35 saves and great ratios. And not like, I'm not going to complain about it, but you know, I've seen them go in DCs, you know, at pick 25, 28, 30, you know, that seems kind of wild to me. So pick 35, not too bad. But then I wasn't in a hurry to take another one. You know, I'm just going to keep taking value if it falls to me or just, you know, position players with a track record.
Well, and that's the thing with 12s compared to like a 15. I think people think in a 15, it runs out faster, I guess, because there's 30 closers are getting taken where like our 30 have to essentially be, they don't have to, but for the most part, 30 for sure will be taken. Plus specs where in a 12, some teams take 2, some teams take 3. It's kind of all over the board. Some teams just punt it and play the wire. Like it's, to me, it feels a little different, but it's like the two pronged attack. If you take like a Diaz early, it kind of just opens you up to just the waiting game. You can just follow ADP and see where it goes for like your RP2 or even 3. Where if you kind of wait, or if you kind of wait, like you said, with like an Inigo and you get like a Helsley or a Pagan, you almost feel like you don't have to, but you almost are close to a double tap range somewhere in there to kind of fill it up. So it's just kind of two completely different worlds in that, and it just changes the draft. That's why, you know, drafting more than one league helps a lot to feel all that out. Some more like macro level questions for you here. Through your early draft season, are there any positions that seem like extra shallow to you compared to maybe previous years or just in general?
Yeah, previous years, I don't know. I don't keep that much track of, you know, what happened in the previous season. I don't, you know, go like back test my teams from the year before that, you know, finished high up and see what I could have done. I just feel like that's kind of a waste of time. I put all the energy and effort I could into the season for 6 months. Turn the page, take a couple months off, you know, start over January 1, essentially, with the new year and the new season. But just through drafts, I mean, and this is nothing new, but third base is terrible. It gets really bad. I mean, you get outside the top 10 and, you know, Okamoto's maybe number 11 on that list. And beyond that, I don't like anything. Like Noel V. Marte, no. Royce Lewis, no. So, like, those guys, you know, are 9-10 on, you know, most people's list. And I would move Chapman and Okamoto up into 9-10 and have Murakami on the outside looking in just because of his strikeout rate and batting average. And then after that, it sucks a lot. And so, you know, even in 12-teamers, 12 third basemen go, plus, you know, some CIs and maybe some utility. So, you know, 15, 18, 20 third basemen are getting taken. And if you don't get something in the top 10, I feel like you are way behind.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. In pretty much every draft I've done, I've tried my best to push up third basemen now in Tout Wars on Tuesday night. That did not happen. And it got to a point, though, to what you're saying, is after like the 12 or 13th one, I said, screw it, I'm just waiting. I'm not even going to force the hand now because they all pretty much aren't great. And at least that's an OBP format, so there's other ways around it. But yeah, to your NFBC, you know, 5x5 deal, I'm with you completely. Like, I stick with a lot of Chapman. I've been really starting to become a fan of Okamoto. I am becoming a fan of him, especially at his price tag, because again, it drops off quickly. And I actually like his skill set, so I'm starting to jump in on him as well. Because, yeah, we talk about, you know, everyone talks about the cliffs at every position. And to your point, that third base one is brutal. It is really, really bad. So dead on there. What position feels like the deepest to you?
I think first base. And again, I don't think that's, you know, anything earth shattering. Lot of talent top to bottom, you know, round two through round 15, 16, 18, 20, depending on, you know, Christian Walker and Torkelson, you know, Aranda, Burleson, like all those guys are going usually between round 15 and 20. And they're good. Like, you know, they all offer something, you know. It's like Torkin Walker, 25 homer upside, 225 average, but, you know, probably 80-80 in the counting stats. You know, Burleson, a little less homers, but, you know, 270, 275 batting average. Same with Aranda. You know, those guys I think are pretty similar as far as their profiles and projections go, but could be a nice batting average boost, you know, that you need. You kind of already know what your team is looking like, batting average guys, and if you take a couple, you know, early mashers who don't have that batting average base, you can try to make it up with those guys. And that's not real common, especially at that position. Usually it's just, you know, all or nothing with the Torkelson Walker profile. So it's nice to have the Burleson, Aranda, you know, Yandy Diaz, if you want to move up a couple rounds, just old reliable. Like, the guy's just constantly disrespected and slept on in drafts. You know, as long as he plays enough, he's hitting 285, probably 20 homers, you know, leading off most of the time. I love the guy. He's won me a lot of money over the years, and I keep taking him if I can. But he's getting pushed up this year. Finally, people are catching on.
This is the first year. It's every year I try to tell my, like, learn from my mistakes. I don't review my teams in depth like you were talking about. I don't have time for that. But I do kind of, at least when I do like the positional reviews with Ryan and stuff. It reminds me, and I've always been like, I don't want Yandy. I don't want Yandy. And then I'm like, I've actually been in on Yandy more than usual this season for everything you mentioned. And a lot of it, it's like similar to the closers we talked about for me at first base. It's, do I take one of the, like, Alonzo's, Vlad's, one of those early ones, or I just say screw it and go to this pocket you're talking about of all really good kind of similar but a little different first baseman, and pepper that, and then that's kind of where, like, Yandy's a little ahead of me, your point, but zero problem with the Walkers and the others of the world. They're all very, very solid. Last question I have for you, and it comes more so when I was listening to you doing the live stream. It just dawned on me we were talking about things right now. You referenced ADP value a lot. How are you utilizing ADP in drafts? Because I've talked to a lot of people about this, and some use it like for their practice when they get in there, but they don't really pay attention to it in draft, or some guys keep draft boards up and are always looking at it, this and that. Like Ryan's got the always updated every day live ADP tracker. How do you utilize ADP when you're drafting?
So for every draft, I print off the last week's worth of online championships. Just plug it into the ADP, hit ADP board, hit print, and I just have it in front of me as kind of a guide. And I'm just checking names off. You know, guys who have gotten hurt, they just get X'd out with a Sharpie. Guys I'm not on, I know I'm not on. And so I don't really need to cross them out. But it's just guys who have gotten hurt or who are going to be out a month or two. I'm usually just X'ing out. And that includes like Wheeler and Woodruff and, you know, Hader, you know, Estevez. I'm crossing off right now. I just don't know what to make of it. I mean, I had the guy last year. He helped me run away with the league. I got him in like round 18 or something, you know, but, you know, you got to look at what's happening now. Like you can't remember what happened last year. We know, especially playing all the baseball leagues that we do, is, you know, last year's results have no impact and no bearing on what this year is going to bring. You know, BABIPs change, batting averages change, you know, locations, velocity, pitch type, all that stuff has a huge impact on what this year's results are going to be. So, yeah, I just try to keep it really simple. Have the board in front of me, piece of paper, check guys off, look for value. Like I got a lot of value in the Waxman draft. It was kind of nice. It wasn't really guys I was on, but I was getting, you know, guys I liked, you know, 15, 20 picks past ADP. And I'm just going to take it every time. Like, even if I'm like not super high on the guy, I almost took O'Neal Cruz, who was just like a no for me.
Yep.
Like just no. It wasn't in that draft because he went pick like 75 or something stupid. But it was another draft where he was falling to like almost pick like 110, 115. Oh, let me find it. And I was like getting really, really tempting.
There's always somebody in every draft where you look at him and you're just like, oh man. Like I almost took Shane McClanahan tonight because he was right. it was like round 19. I was like, okay, this is my SP5. Like, I'll take it. And there's ILs in this league. I'm like, I'm about to take a chance on this one. This is crazy.
Yeah, and I know that some very, very smart, good, successful drafters have been taking a bunch of Shane McClanahan and DCs, right? Like I said, I got my buddies doing DCs, and they're kind of reporting back like, hey, you know, we all know the names, right? We all know who the really, really good players are, and they're in DCs, learning the pool, obviously trying to win the overall, trying to make money. And I'm just like, hey, who are they on? Like, give me, like, who do you see them taking draft after draft? Obviously, and McClanahan's name came up a lot. I haven't been able to click the button yet. It just scares the shit out of me. But, you know, round 19, I don't think it can hurt you. So,
yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, I was sitting there and talking with Ryan on the stream, and he knows how much I'm, like, not going to click the button on McClanahan. But I'm sitting there going, dude, like, wait, come on. we're getting to the point where this is ridiculous eventually. Like, he's got to take the chance. And, you know, like the $1 million man said, everyone's got a price, and we are definitely getting there at that point in time.
Yeah, and that's all our game is, right? It's like, no, I'm out on that guy. Well, you know, you give me 30 picks of value, maybe I'm in on him. You know, it's just everybody's got a price in our game, and you know, you just try to get the best value and the most value out of the guys you can. It's like in auctions, right? You have a $260 budget, you try to come out of there with $300 worth of value, and you got a great team.
Yep. Want that, you want to find that value wherever you can, and eventually the auction is the perfect example of getting guys that you would rarely ever think about drafting in a snake draft. Like there's so many guys that fit that mold in auctions for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk shortstops. Let's get after it and talk some shortstops tonight here. It's for some the most, you know, popular position just because it's so flashy, because it's very top heavy, it feels like, but it's also very deep. I say top heavy is because so many go early, but there's players throughout the entire draft at shortstop. So talk a little strategy at first, then we'll do some player debates to kind of go through some of the player pool here. But Brandon, just want to get you over all thoughts. I mentioned the depth of the position, and like when you just look at the last 7 days in drafts, there is in OCs, there's three taken in the first 12 picks, essentially. Lindor's fallen out with his hand injury, of course, but there's still usually it's like 8 or 9 taken by the 50th pick in a draft right now. So how do you look at the depth at the position? Is like I'm saying the word top heavy. Maybe I'm speaking out of school because maybe you see it a different way. But how do you look at the shortstop position?
Yeah, I look at it similarly. I do think it's top heavy. I think it goes through a little bit of a lull in the middle, and then I think there's a sharp cliff at Dansby Swanson. So for me, Dansby Swanson is my cliff of, and I think there's like a 30 or 40 pick ADP drop after him. Like the middle guys, I think are all kind of the same, like Mookie, Abrams, and Perdomo, I think can all fill and be beneficial in certain builds. And then I think you kind of get your batting average boosts with Bichette, Pena, and Seager, but you also have a lot of injury risk there. And then you got Trevor Story and Willie Adames, who are kind of one-off story, you know, coming off the, I won't say career year, but recent career year. And then Willie Adames, I think you know what you're getting, right? You're getting 30 homers. You're getting a 230 average on a decent team. You know, counting stats should be pretty good. I like him a lot, actually. But I also tend to struggle with having a good batting average because I'm just like, yeah, this guy shouldn't be here. 30 homers, you know, could be 90-90, good team. Can he hit 250? Sure. Will he? Probably not. You know, but and then, you know, 10 to 15 chippy steals, like that goes a long way. Yep. So, yeah. I don't know. The top guys, I haven't taken one yet, but that's kind of been more draft slot than anything. So I haven't really had a chance to take anybody in the first round yet.
Let's elaborate on that then. Okay, so for the first round, that answers it a little more because when you're leaving a draft, I've talked about it many times because I agree. Like the Swanson's usually the end all be all for me. Like I was looking through the list right now while you're talking. There's like two guys or three guys. I'm like, okay, if worst comes to worst, middle infield, we got you. But yeah, Swanson's that definite cliff for me, and I have a lot of Dansby because of those reasons. The Adames call I like a lot because I always stink with batting average as well, but I'll play the power game and go from there. Again, so my 12s are a little different than 15s because that could really sink you in a 15. If there's no way you're making batting average up at all in those formats, there's no chance. But you mentioned you haven't really had the chance in a first round to get one. Are you trying to get one like in the first 2-3? Like, do you have a goal when you enter a draft and to leave with a short? Because I know I've talked about it with Ryan. Like, I like to try to get one of the top 6, 7, 8. I want at least one of them before when I leave a draft. If I can get two, that's great. It's not a must, but that's kind of my target.
Yeah, I don't excuse me. I don't have a specific draft strategy in mind. I'm just kind of clicking through my teams here. I've only taken one early shortstop through 6 OCs. I took Zach Neto. Okay. In round 3 at pick 30, and then my only other shortstop before round 9 was CJ Abrams on a team I needed some speed, and then I doubled him up with Jeremy Pena in round 9. I have a lot of round 9 Jeremy Pena. I have Corey Seager, and I have a couple of Willie Adames shares, and then one or two Swansons. So I have not been taking the early shortstop, but like I said, Neto at pick 30. I mean, really hard to say no. The guy had 50 barrels last year, you know, hard contact, hard hit, swing speed, all that stuff's really good. You know, I know that's going to kind of transition into our first ADP debate, you know, between him and Trey Turner. And for me, it's Neto. Trey Turner's fast. He's very fast. He will never not be fast. But his power decline, I think, is real. Not getting any younger. He's only getting older. Barrels are dropping by year, you know, hard hit, barrel percentage, you know, swing speed, all that stuff is just going down. So
I think maybe – well, it's funny listening – not funny. It's interesting listening to you to break down your approach to shortstop because – I need to look differently in a room instead of focusing so hard on needing certain things, because I know I have a lot of Pena, I have a lot of Swanson, a lot of Adames. They're usually middle infielders for me, but yeah, you could definitely build with them as a starting shortstop and load up elsewhere. And does that mean you usually have like a late second baseman as your middle infield?
Yeah, because I actually do. I think second base is pretty deep. Let me find.
Especially late. Like, it's not really an early thing, but late is like, it's kind of, it's almost like first base, but later.
All right. So the latest I took a starting shortstop was, shocker, Dansby Swanson, round 14. And Nico Horner was my second baseman. And my MI was Glaber in round 21.
Okay.
And I felt like Glaber was the end of the cliff for MI. And, you know, we're at pick 240-ish.
Yeah.
250. Yeah, so 250,
almost, yeah.
Yeah, and I do feel like there's a lot of decent late second basemen, like Polanco, Semien, you know, Glaber. Bryson Stott I like if he falls a little bit. I like Brandon Lowe. I'm out on Albies. Xavier Edwards, he's just hard to build a team around. But there's a lot of second basemen out there. You know, it's not as thin as a lot of people are making it out to be. It's not great, but you know, you're just kind of taking.
It's just not a lot early on that people like. So it's not sexy, I guess, to people.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. It's not sexy. It's just steady. You know, there's two, three. Yeah. That go in the top 100?
Glaber Torres never screams sexy, but like to your point, if you look at his stat line, like I did it the other night just for fun. I was like doing an underdog draft and, you know, you just kind of look at what, you know, their player page while they're drafting. You look at the stat there, the points they've accumulated every year. Mm-hmm. It's a stud, absolute stud. Like you wouldn't think about it just based on name because his stat line is boring as it gets, but it's also what he can almost pencil in every year. Which is,
yeah, you don't have to guess. You know, when they're doing their projections for him, it's like, oh, yeah, he's going to hit 16 homers, 72 RBIs, 72 runs, you know, 5 to 8 steals, and he's going to bat 250, 260. It's like, okay, that's in round 20. Fantastic. You know, it's not great, no C's, because you just need so much offensive production. But if you, you know, plan it out appropriately, you know, you don't want to take that Xavier Edwards, 3 homers, 27 steals, 40 RBIs. 80 runs. Like you have to make up a lot of RBIs and a lot of homers to get a Xavier Edwards to work on your team. And
dead profile.
It's hard. Like in the standalone we did together last year, like he fell like 40 picks in the Vegas 250. And you know, I'm just like, you know, I'm the only one not in person. So I'm just pounding away on the chat board and like, all right, guys, fine. I'll do it. Like I'll fall on the sword. I'll take the guy. But it was like pick like 195, you know, it's like, and I struggled in power and he stole 27. He didn't steal 45. You know, it's like, you're kind of banking on way more than you're going to get. And so I just think it's tough. I'll take somebody else. That's just me. I took Otto Lopez over him in a recent draft. Lopez,
though. Like, I think there's a lot more upside to Otto Lopez than
I do too. And, you know, 15 homers and, you know, can you get me 20 steals? Then I'm only 7 or 8 behind. I'm way ahead in homers, probably similar average, more RBIs. Yeah, I don't know. I know you love the bus driver. Like, you know, obviously he's just a total show mascot, you know, but
I'd probably like him too much, but at his ADP, I think his floor is pretty sweet. Like I can work with that type thing.
Yeah. He's a good floor play and you know, he's got the, you know, his batted ball profile. He's got the barrels to back it up. I look at barreled balls a lot, you know, and then you just kind of use the 60% equivalent, you know, someone's got 30 barrels in a season, you know, you figure they should extrapolate to about 18 home runs. Some people run hotter than others based on pulled fly ball rate and park factor. But, you know, it's just kind of quick, dirty math just to see if they're running above or below expectation in homers.
Yeah. It's been some of the really eye-opening podcast I've done on this show with Ryan that Toby opened my eyes 2 years ago when I was doing Bubba and the Bat Flip is that 60%, you know, home run to barrels.
That's where I learned it. I learned it listening to you guys, you know, and that's just a number that stuck with me.
And it makes so much sense. Like you say, like, yeah, certain guys, like, you know, your Isak Paredes, yeah, he pulls everything. So, like, he's going to overachieve. But there's so many players that underachieve, and those are the ones that you can kind of look at going, okay, this is someone maybe we're taking a chance on. Or, hey, this was legit. Like, when people think things are crazy. Like, so those are pretty sweet. I did want to at least comment, though. I thought it was funny, like you said, as we were with the Vegas draft. And I was just, in general, it's always annoying when you're in a draft with, like, a really sharp room, when everyone's passing on the same player. So you're just sitting there going, okay, like to your point, someone's got to jump on the sword because eventually everyone's got a price. But it's just like, okay, everyone's doing it. Usually, like, there's the joke, someone in your draft's going to like someone and take them, so you don't have to worry about it. But that draft, that was not happening in that room at all.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here wondering, I'm like, am I the idiot? You know, it's like the old poker adage. Like, if you can't spot the fish in the first 5 minutes at the table, you're it, you know? So I was kind of thinking that during that draft. I'm like, oh, am I the dummy who's just going to take this nothing three-homer profile? And it, you know, it was fine. You know, I played him all year, but he definitely did not. Even at that cost, I don't think he paid off because his power numbers were so bad and the steals weren't, you know, like I said, 27. It's not earth shattering. Yeah. That too.
Spoiler alert, Brandon still cashed in that league. So it don't feel too sorry for him on that one.
I was happy to get second. That was a fun battle. That league was a ton of fun.
That was a really good, really good league. When it comes to shortstop, now, by the sounds of it, the way that you don't really get aggressive at the position, you kind of wait till that eighth, ninth, 10th round. This could be a really different answer. How do you, or do you attack specific stats with the position? Is it strictly like, I got to get speed here because speed is so limited elsewhere? Are you looking for certain power? Like, what are you looking for stats wise when you look at shortstop, or is it just, hey, we're building a team?
Yeah, I think it's just, for me, it's building a team. Like, you know, I'm keeping track of my team. Every round, every pick, I have a spreadsheet going. I have my categorical targets already plugged in. And it's just accumulating, you know, as I draft a guy. Pop the stats in, see if I'm on pace. And, you know, I don't really start trying to get into, okay, well, I'm light in steals. Let me just take a steal guy to fill that need. Again, my brain is so OC focused, and you need such a strong base out of all 14 offensive players that you just can't take a guy who sucks in a category. It just hurts you. You know, you need to average something like 24 homers, 75 RBIs, 75 runs, and 14 steals per position. That includes catcher. So if you're taking two back end catchers that hit 10 to 14 home runs, and you're taking Xavier Edwards, you're behind by 50 homers. And you're going to be so far behind in power in the counting stats that I think you just need to be looking at what's available. What do they give me across the board? Not just like, hey, I only have 80 steals. Yeah, Xavier Edwards, he's going to give me another 28 to 32. Yeah, that'll get me up to 115, 120. Okay, let's take him. And, you know, then all of a sudden you look at your homer number. You're like, oh, no. I'm in round 20 and I need to average 22 homers at every position till the end of the draft. Well, that doesn't exist, right? That's a pipe dream. So I think for me, you're just looking at who's the best player across the board. And that's why I kind of keep defaulting to Swanson and Adames. They're not great batting average guys, but they contribute everywhere else. So if they can pop like a 250, 260 somehow, you know, and you know, you're going to get 25. I think Swanson's been, you know, 24, 22, 16 in a shortened season. And we know Adames is just essentially going to hit 30. You know, and then Swanson's 15 to 20 steals, you know, 80, 80. Adames could be, you know, 10 to 15 steals, but a potential for 90, 100, right? And so I just think those guys are great value at the places they're going in the draft. And if you can get Adames around 10, 11 and Swanson before around 14, 15, I think you can kick that can down the road and you don't have to force it. Obviously, there's great, great shortstops in Witt, Gunner, Ellie. Happy to have any of those guys on my team. I just, like I said, I have not had a draft position where I could get them yet.
Makes total sense. Yeah, Dansby to me is like a, I guess, depends on if you like Neto, or he's like a poor man Zach Neto. Like, I like him a lot. And you get him 120 picks later. All right, let's do some like ADP debates. This way we can talk about the player pool a little more. Just for reference for people using NFBC OC ADP over the last 7 days. So I guess the 24th through the 3rd or something in that realm. Just to recap, you have three going in the first round of an OC. You have six going in the first two rounds, and there's a drop-off. There's 12 shortstops taken in the top 100 picks is something. And to Brandon's Cliff comment, Swanson goes around pick 148.5. So in your, you know, top, let's say, 12, 13 rounds, you're going to have 16 shortstops off the board. And Connor Griffin has entered that conversation. We will talk about Connor Griffin because I'd probably get blackballed if we didn't talk about the golden child on the shortstop podcast. But I think the way I draft and just knowing you a little bit, I think we'll be on the same page on this one, but especially with the elevated price tag. But it was, well, we'll talk about him when we get there. All right. So we kind of, you kind of already hit on it. The Trey Turner, Zach Neto. I like to bring it up just because it's the veteran that hits for good average, but to your point, the power is declining in Turner. You got Neto, who's got this 30-30 skill set, but everyone, you know, points out they'll look at the swing and miss, or look at the contact rates, and all these things that people want to look at, and they're going right next to each other. It really hasn't changed a lot. It's like pick 26 and pick 28. Lindor is snuck in between now because of his injury, which could be a whole other conversation for another day. You pretty much already said you'd rather go Neto than Turner. You already did go Neto than Turner. If you want to elaborate any more on that, feel free. We're on the same page. Like, I think Turner is a very good floor play. If you want a batting average asset that gets you maybe 15 homers and 25 steals, great. Maybe more, but there's a floor where Neto has that ceiling that's much different.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it's just, you know, savant, like just Statcast, you know, if you're looking at Trey Turner, you know, last season, 22 percentile in barrel at 5.8 and hard hit was 44th percentile at 42.1. And Neto's at 14% barrel and 46.6 hard hit. You know, obviously you're getting two different things out of him. Like you said, you're getting more of a floor play out of Turner, 15 homers, 30 steals, you know, 275, maybe he can pop a 300, and you're getting less of an average out of Neto. But you know, when you hit a ball hard consistently, you're giving yourself a chance to put it in play, spike a BABIP season that could, you know, get that 254 up to 265, maybe even 270. And you're giving me 30-30, 270. It's not even a conversation, right? There's Trey Turner's not hitting 30 homers next year, or excuse me, this year. You know, he hit 15 last year. Like I said, barrels declining, hard hits declining, bat speed's declining. Dude is forever fast, 100th percentile sprint speed. But, you know, last two seasons, Turner's had 28 barrels each season. Neto, in his injury-shortened season 2 years ago, had 34, and last year he had 50, right? So the power is real. You know, like I said, using that 60% number, that comes out to 30 homers. He had, I think, 27. You know, and just give me that. The team context is bad. Runs and RBIs aren't going to be great. But, you know, maybe Trout stays healthy and drives him in. You know, maybe Joe Adell has another 35, 37 homer season. You know, their offense is decent. Their pitching staff is atrocious, but their offense at least has some decent pieces to maybe get him, you know, to 90 runs to help offset, you know, some of that batting average that you're missing. But the homer potential, like, it's not even close for me. Like, Turner's been going ahead of him in almost every draft I've done. He went ahead of him in the draft I got Neto in mid round three. But I'm just taking him anyways over, straight up over Turner.
Yeah, I'm with you. And like, that's like, I get it. I've heard the argument too, is team context. And yeah, those Angels aren't a very good baseball team. That's well established. But to your point, the top half of that order, at least the top half, the bottom half isn't horrible. The top half should at least keep them in the world of run production, to your point. Like, we've seen that with J-Ram for years. The Guardians lineup has been garbage on the bottom half for years.
That's terrible.
He still puts up the numbers. Like, there's over half the teams in baseball are like that, honestly. So, I agree with you on Neto. I'll take that ceiling play if I'm taking one early all day. And real quick, just because I mentioned Lindor, it could be a blanket comment. But obviously, it probably depends player to player. But how are you dealing with these players with hamate injuries that are taking a fall? You talked about you print out your ADP. If there's an injury, you cross them off. Are you crossing these guys off, or are you more like, I'll buy the dip? Or it's probably player to player, but how are you handling this?
Yeah, I was trying to buy the dip on Carroll and Lindor. Jackson Holliday, I wasn't on, period. So his price before the hamate surgery, I thought was stupid. I mean, I did not see any reason.
Makes sense.
I've been kind of tempted to take him at pick 220. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. Well, if this doesn't work, I can just cut him. But at pick 150, where he was originally going, I just thought it was crazy. But yeah, I mean, I like Carroll. You know, in your beat Bubba draft, I took him at 5 ahead of Acuna and ahead of J-Ram. So he was a guy I'm very much on. Have a stupid amount of him on Underdog too. And as soon as I saw him go and pick like 2022, immediately after the injury was announced, I was like, maybe I jump in something and try to take advantage of the price depression. But I don't know. Lindor's a little different just because of the age. And his Statcast profile is not overly impressive, but the dude just is a 30-30 machine. 3 straight years, just like you said, just write it down in pen. I don't know. I like Carroll. I'd be willing to take him. I did pass on him when I had my 11th pick. I went Crochet Tatis, and Carroll went right after. And that was probably the tiebreaker for me was the surgery. You know, obviously, if he never breaks his hand, he's not even remotely a possibility for me. I just didn't want the exposure, like already having him in one draft, being able to take a healthy Tatis to start the season versus a little bit of an unknown in Carroll, even if it's 2 weeks, 2 to 4 weeks, maybe to get back to like full health. That's still 1/6 of the season that you're getting suboptimal production. So I didn't feel like it was worth the risk at that point. You know, if we start seeing him take at bats in a game or two of spring training before the season starts, I think he goes right back to being a top 6 pick.
100%. So I think a lot of these are, it's like, you need to, if you like the guy before, buy the dip, because the second we see, it's like the old adage with pitchers, once we see them on the mound, like things are going to change. You see these guys play a game or two, have a knock or two, it's going to change everything. And
we're back. And Lindor may be a little different just because he's a few years older. Maybe he recovers a little slower. True. You know, the Mets are just good, so they don't need to rush it. I don't think Arizona's very good. You know, and maybe they're trying to just squeak into that last playoff spot. The Mets should be winning the division or fighting the Phillies with all the Braves injuries and now suspensions. Sure. You know, so maybe they can afford to slow play it a little bit or give them some time off in the first month, you know, play them, you know, 5 out of 6 or 5 out of 7. So I think where he's going now feels right. And it'll probably stay there until the end of draft season, which is late round 2, early round 3. And I'd be super comfortable if I have like a top 3 pick. Even if I've taken Witt, like I wouldn't take him in round 2. I'd see if he got to me in round 3. But yeah. I think I'd take him over Turner and Neto. Just that, God, that team is so good. I mean, 110, 120 runs, you know, if he plays a full season or only misses a week is super, super doable.
Agreed. Full agree. So good to hear that you aren't avoiding either. Let's talk about a veteran and a youngster that – it keeps getting better. I don't know if we've seen his prime yet. Maybe we have. But, yeah, Mookie Betts coming at pick 58. C.J. Abrams at 63. So going right next to each other here. Again, they are the 7th and 8th shortstop off the board. Mookie Betts is going to be 33 this year. We've seen injuries, age, illnesses, you name it, have popped up the last couple of seasons. Still a good ball player, but not the guy we once saw. Where C.J. Abrams... 31 steals each of the last 2 years. He's at 47 the year before. We've seen pop. Batting average is, you know, Mookie might have him in the batting average world. But to me, things are pretty close. I think Abrams has the ceiling here. Maybe Betts bounces back. There's a lot of what ifs here. What are your thoughts on Mookie Betts for C.J. Abrams?
I'm Team Abrams. I have not even thought about drafting Mookie Betts in any of my drafts. He's kind of a do not draft for me. I don't know. I mean, I know he had that one magical season in LA 3 years ago. I mean, the guy was all world. He's an incredible athlete. But I really do think his skills are declining. If you look at the last 2 years, yeah, I know one was shortened by injury and then the other by, you know, the sickness that he had in spring training. But, I mean, last 2 seasons, 24 and 29 barrels. You know, Abrams 29 and 35. Not much better. But I think Abrams is a floor play. Like 2030, write it down, you know, 2030, 250. He scored as many runs as Betts last year, you know, fewer RBIs, obviously. Team context, you know, that check mark's going to Betts. Like Dodgers are the best team on the planet. Just stupid top to bottom, right? So if he's in there and he's getting on base, he's going to get driven in. He's going to score runs. But again, another franchise that does not need to force it. If they have a hangnail, they're going to sit. Like, they're projected to win 103 games and run away with the West. They're minus 600 to win the West. It's like, why do they even need to push it? You know? So if he's still fatigued or he's run down, he's going to get days off. And we all know it's volume, especially in 12s, volume, volume, volume. Like, you need guys to play every day. You need the at-bats. You need the counting stats. So for me, it's Abrams. I've clicked Abrams over Betts. I will continue to do it. And I don't love CJ Abrams, but again, round five, give me a 20-30 guy. I'm just going to take it because you need it. You know, you just, it's hard. He's not a five category guy, but he's probably four, you know, just count the RBIs and the batting averages as a one, and the other three are pretty good.
Yeah, I think Abrams is awesome. Like, and the Nats aren't great, but like offensively, they have a lot of young players that could become interesting if it clicks. It's a big if, but I like Abrams a lot, to your point. I think a lot of people are worried about him because of his, you know, being a dum-dum a couple of years ago, but I think that's called being young. We've all done young, dumb things. I love his skill set. I think he's so good. And yeah, I take him every single time I can, especially if I haven't taken a shortstop yet. All right, this one is intriguing. Actually, Woody in the chat asked about Perdomo versus Pena. And I said, just wait, we got you covered here. I've done these a few times. Geraldo Perdomo, ADP of 79, Pena 89. So they're going 10 picks apart. But the reason I really wanted to bring these up is I'd like to ask everybody I can, what are your thoughts on Geraldo Perdomo? So putting them in an ADP debate works, because obviously just burst onto the scene last year. 20 homers, 27 steals, 290, 100 RBIs, 98 runs. Like, good Lord, everything clicked for Perdomo. But then you got Jeremy Pena. We've talked about so many guys, Brandon, that you can just pencil him in almost. I was like, it's 15 to 20 homers. It's probably 20 steals. Going to hit for, you know, probably hit more towards 270. Could hit 304 last year. It was great. But like, right, it's just so much to say about just penciling it in, moving on, doing your thing. But then there's Perdomo, who's had this monster year. Do we believe this is who he is? Is the regression to what? Like, a million questions with Perdomo. But your barrel-pulled stuff, he checks the boxes there. So what's your thoughts on Perdomo versus Pena? Because this is, to me, it probably should be closer than I give it.
Yeah, Perdomo has the craziest StatCast profile I'm pretty sure I've ever seen of any player I've looked into. He has terrible barrel, terrible hard hit, terrible bat speed, but everything he hits, he just squares up dead center. It's so crazy. I mean, bat speed, 7th percentile, hard hit, 11th percentile, barrel rate, 25th percentile, average exit velo, 16. Like, it's just awful. And then his XBA is 278. His squared up is 92%. He doesn't chase. He doesn't swing and miss. He walks more than he strikes out. It's just like a bizarre profile. So I don't think you can count anything close to 20 homers. You know, he also had over 700 plate appearances. True. You know, it's really hard to kind of pencil that in as a repeat. So I just pulled up Fangraphs, and I've been kind of using Oopsie for kind of everything for this podcast tonight. And, you know, they got him 13 homers, 21 steals, you know, 90 runs, 70 RBIs, doing a little bit of rounding, and then batting 260. You know, I think that's a lot closer. You know, the average, maybe you can give him like a 275 if you feel like the XBA is pretty genuine. But, I mean, he had 9 barrels two seasons ago in around 300 plate appearances. So if you double that, you get 18 barrels, maybe you get 11 homers, you know, give him a couple more for another 50 at-bats. You know, he had 33 last year. So, you know, should have had about 20 homers, you know. I feel like it's close. I don't know. I can't click the button. I took him in a draft. I think I took him in the barf draft. He fell really far though. You know, and it was a 15 teamer.
I remember that now. Yeah. He fell quite
a bit. He fell like 20 or 30 picks. And I was just like, I'm not on this guy.
100, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not on the guy, but you know, again, everybody's got their price and he was a good value at that point.
I was going to take him. I remember texting you about it. Like,
I'm like, okay, I'll just, if nothing else, I'll take the batting average and the runs, right? Because he's going to bat first or second. I just like what Pena does a little better. I'll take the track record. Again, probably feels more like a floor play. but I think you can just write down 15, 20 with room for upside. You know, his contact stats are better. He doesn't hit it that much harder, but he hits it harder. You know, I mean, he's, you know, 43% hard hit, you know, 8% barrel, average exit velo is 89. You know, it's, but he doesn't square it up when he hits it nearly as much. He chases more. He's definitely faster. So, you know, I feel like he's definitely going to score more. I mean, Perdomo's sprint speed's 44th percentile at 27.2, but we all know steals is more about desire and, you know, team philosophy than it is about speed. I mean, we can look at Soto and Josh Naylor, two of the not fastest guys in the league, and they stole 30 and 40. You know, it's just like, hey, sometimes if you just want to go, you go. Or you have a good read on pitchers, or you have a good first base coach, you know, which was the rumor with the Soto stuff. And, you know, so that stuff can change, but give me the fast guy. The fast guy is going to have a better chance of having a higher success rate, a higher stolen base opportunity rate. And, you know, so just give me Pena, especially going, you know, around later. I just like that profile. And it's a better ballpark. And he pulls the ball, you know, Crawford boxes, Houston, all that stuff. And I think it's a better team. So I take Pena.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you. Pena is one of my favorite targets year in and year out. Like, I seem to have so much Jeremy Pena on my team. And Perdomo, like, my biggest thing is regress to what? Now, if it's the projections we're seeing, which are usually pretty in play, yeah, it's pretty much Jeremy Pena, your slight below him. So it's like we're in the same ballpark here and take the dip. Or at least Pena, like, we know who he is. And I'm always a believer, and maybe I'm naive in this, like, these young players, both are young. We could see more. Like, Pena was like a 263, they hit 304. Like, do I believe he's 304? Maybe not, but, like, why can't he develop into, like, a 280 hitter? Like, that seems like something that's possible. So,
yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm with you. Is he going to hit 300? No, but his XBA was 270, right? Yeah. So it's not like it's a big stretch to go from 270 up to 300 or 270 to 285. You know, and his OPS last year was 840. You know, that's a 100-point jump from the previous two seasons, yeah. You know. And Perdomo did the same thing. You know, he was 850, 140-point jump from the previous two seasons. But I don't know. It's just, like, it's hard to see that repeating. It's really hard for me to see the 98 and 100 repeating for sure.
Agreed. That's a big number.
Yeah. I mean, those are, like, ultra-elite numbers. Like, those are first- and second-round player numbers.
He was 100-100. I think he was like a top five on the player rater last year. Like, it's absolutely insane.
It was incredible. I mean, here's a fun story for you. So I'm doing a 750 OC with a buddy of mine last year. It's the only team I think I've ever shared on the NFBC platform. But we talked about doing it, and I had so many teams. It was kind of helpful to have a co-manager. And we were just going for the upside in the prize pool. And we had Anthony Volpe and Perdomo. And we dropped Perdomo and kept Volpe, and just absolutely smashing our head against the wall the entire season. I mean, that just tells you how that team did. It's terrible. But, you know, it's just like, yeah, this guy's out of nowhere. Who is this guy? He's a punching Judy. He doesn't have any power. You know, yeah.
You're just waiting for it to stop. You're waiting for the hot streak to stop.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
And then we're just watching Volpe suck and then get hurt and, you know, shoulder. And then Perdomo is just like, yeah, I'm an all-star. I'm a top five player. Like, yeah.
I tell the story for years. You've been playing the game long enough. It was the year Matt Carpenter just went ballistic. But the first, like, 3 weeks, he was so bad. And I was in a 12-team league, and I dropped him the week before he started his hot streak for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a great feeling in that one. So, yeah.
It happens. It definitely happens.
Oh, yeah. It'll happen again, too. I know it will. All right, let's get to the moment that three people have probably been waiting for. Willy Adames, you professed your love for Willy Adames. I fully agree with everything you said so far. His ADP is 130. We know who Willy Adames is. That's great. Connor Griffin's ADP is 134. Over the last week, he's gone as high as 105. The helium is real for Connor Griffin. The playing time, we have no idea what is real with Connor Griffin. Great in the minor leagues. There's no denying that. Prospect pedigree, whatever story you want to go with, they're all there. How are you approaching Willy Adames versus Connor Griffin? Like I said, I think I know the answer, but let's throw it out there, because if we didn't talk Connor Griffin, This wouldn't be a shirt swap preview.
Yeah, it'd be the Simpsons meme with the pitchforks and, you know, the torches and all that stuff, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and just for context, in the Beat Waxman League last Friday, so 5 days ago, Adames went 2 picks ahead of Connor Griffin in round 10. You cannot pay me enough money to take Connor Griffin anywhere remotely close to Willy Adames. I don't even think you can talk me into taking him, period, in draft season. Yeah. I mean, how short of memories do people have? It's the same organization, the same hyped prospect. Bubba Chandler barely saw the field last year. The Pirates hate baseball. They love money. They love control. They don't want to spend. Why would they put a 19-year-old kid on the field unless they sign him to an 8, 9, or 10-year deal before the season starts? Then the conversation changes, but he's still 19. Like, expecting him to have anything remotely close to a Willy Adames season, I think, is just, like, stone-cold bananas. I think people are crazy, and I think it's a waste of a pick. Best ball, different story. Take a flyer. The guy's in your lineup the whole year. Maybe he comes up the last 2 months, goes crazy, wins you a couple $100,000. But in season-long roto, there's round 10. Like, you need round 10 to produce, like, real stats for 6 months. And just, like, no stinking way. Like, you seriously can't. No one can sell me on it. I don't care.
Yeah.
I've seen him hit 3 home runs. I think that's the only 3 hits he's had all spring training. You know, they've been monsters, and I've seen the highlights, and ball sounds electric off his bat. But again, he's 19, he plays for the Pirates, and they've signed a ton of guys this offseason. I think they're actually gonna have a decent team.
I think their team's not gonna be too bad. Yes.
Yeah, I saw something. Their win total has gone from an open of 72.5 up to 78.5 currently. That might be a little ambitious, but yeah, you know, like their pitching, like their hitting, you know. But if he does start, I mean, there's no way he doesn't bat higher than he can't bat higher than seventh. I literally think it's impossible. You know, and I don't know. Again, I'm out. It's just not my guy. And I know 12s are all about the upside and the overall, because so much money goes to the overall. But I think if you look at the tracker of guys like him, you know, shiny new toy syndrome, prospect pedigree, everybody and their mother is talking him up. You know, you're getting clips retweeted and quote tweeted, and oh my God, this guy's the next coming. Those guys fail more than they succeed, right? And I don't even think it's close. I know Derek Carty just gets rations of shit for just hating on prospects, and he will literally just start Twitter fights that last for weeks at a time. But he's right more often than he's not. And the one time he's wrong, everyone just lets him hear about it, and he doesn't come back with, yeah, but remember the other 10 times I was right, and you guys didn't say anything, you know? So, again, that's my stance. That's usually my stance on prospects and rookies. And again, like Bubba Chandler last year, I had none. I think I had 17 fab leagues. I had no Bubba Chandler, no interest. Yeah. Same, it's just the same organizational concept, right? They're not about putting the best product on the field and, you know, maximizing their revenue. They're about saving money and maximizing service time, right? And player control. And pushing back arbitration eligibility years, right? I mean, it's a thing. It sucks that it's a thing. I wish it wasn't. It's stupid. I want to see the best guys on the field all the time. But you just see it over and over and over with smart teams, let alone the Pirates, who are kind of dumb and, you know, don't make all the right decisions.
Well, and the worst part is, it's like, I'm always okay being wrong. If he somehow gets the job late and does great, so be it. Like, I'm not going to play the game. Like, I'm looking at the ADP tracker that Ryan built in the latest 12 that's on there. Adames went to pick 162 and Connor Griffin went like a 121, I think I saw. Like, that's just insanity to me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, and the, like, the worst part is if you take one of these guys, like with Bubba Chandler last year or Griffin, it's like the price you're paying, you're not dropping them. You're going to stash them, and now you're stuck with this guy. Like, well, maybe you drop him, but most people are just going to hold him, and then you're stashing him. So now you're stashing your 10th round pick, like you said. And that is a lot of value that just went down the drain. Like, again, we might be wrong. It's like, I'm not going to play that game.
100%. I'm wrong plenty, right? Especially when it comes to this game. You know, we're trying to make educated guesses as to what we think the outcomes are going to be months in advance, right? And I was, like I said, I was drafting in January for Fab Leagues, not DCs, not where, you know, your 50 guys are set. You know, it's like, no, I need to be able to make moves in these leagues. You know, but I think we talked about this last year. You know, how long did you hold Bubba Chandler? 4 months?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
You held him for, the only one I took him in. Yep.
Yeah, but you held him for 4 months, and then I don't know, you probably eventually dropped him, and then he came up for the last month, and you're like, ah, shit. Okay, well, whatever.
Yep, pretty much.
But I know a lot of people held on to him. They're holding out. They're like, oh, they got to bring him up. He's like, he's the second coming of Skeens. Why would they hold him down? You know, and then he kind of struggled a little bit, maybe had a small injury thing. You know, who's not to say that doesn't happen now? Like, what if he gets nicked up in spring? What if he gets a hit by pitch? And they're like, oh, yeah, you're definitely not even going to think about being in the big leagues for 3 months. I don't know. Again, I know there's those call-up deadlines and the super two dates and all that stuff that I don't really have any specific knowledge of, other than I know they exist and I think they're stupid. But
it's a business. We got to remember it's a business in the end, and especially – when this season's over, we're going to be reminded that it's a business. So
yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. A couple more here real quick. Similar profiles, both profiles I'm not really a fan of. I know you're not a fan of one of them, so maybe you're not a fan of both. But we got Jacob Wilson coming in with an ADP of 179 and Xavier Edwards at 188. So going real close to each other. Both guys' profile, really good batting average. Power is what it is. One guy can steal more than the other. Jacob didn't steal a ton. We saw 5 steals last year. So it's just a really heavy batting average with, you know, okay pop versus a heavy batting average with no pop and steals. Do any of these profiles do it for you? Because really neither does for me.
No, not really. I'm the same. I mean, I think it can be okay in a 15. I just think they're really hard in a 12. But I do think there is, you know, a place for each of these guys on a 15 team squad. You know, Wilson, like you said, he's the big average booster, doesn't do a lot else. I mean, talk about an awful Statcast profile. Think his barrel rate is sub 2%, if that's humanly possible. You know, and Xavier Edwards, his isn't much better, but at least he does give you that categorical juice with the speed. So for me, yeah, it's kind of a team build that I'm just trying to pull up Wilson real quick. It's a team build that if you need something, yeah, average exit velo 84.6, first percentile, barrel percentage 2.2, sixth percentile, hard hit 24.7, second percentile, bat speed 63.9. I mean, is just horrendous. And I mean, I've watched a bunch of A's games. I get them locally, right? All he's trying to do is just put it in play.
Just slap
it. And he makes tons of contact. The dude has a 7.5% K rate. He has a 5% walk rate, right? So he's just going up, swinging to make contact. It's usually weak contact, singles and doubles. The 13 homers, I feel like, is super fluky. I'd be shocked if he gets to double digits again. But I don't know, man. It's hard to take him. I tried to add him last year, you know, off the wire, because, you know, he's like, all right, this can be a batting average boost, and who knows what you get. And he probably got something close to his best season power-wise last year, I think. Obviously, they're playing the same stadium, you know, has the weather advantage, has the small ballpark advantage, but he's not trying to hit dingers. He's saving that for Kurtz and Langoliers and, you know, all the other guys on the team who hit for power. He's just trying to get on base. And whether that's at the top of the order or towards the bottom, just keep the lineup moving. To be determined, I think he'd be an okay leadoff hitter, but the 5% walk rate's brutal for your leadoff guy. You know, if he hits 300, what's his OBP, 320? You know, and you kind of want something better at the top of the lineup for that. But there's a possibility there. You get some category juice and runs if he does start leading off. You know, Edwards, you have the built-in leadoff, but again, we know who he is, right? Less than 5 homers, something around 30 steals, you know, 80 runs, something between 260 and 280. I don't know. It's hard to make that work, like I said earlier, but
Yeah.
Fits a need. Each one fits a need. If you need average, take Wilson. If you need steals, you know, take Edwards. And for me, don't take either in a 12. But
yeah, hopefully you're not in this position is what it comes down to. In a 12.
Yeah.
Last debate I have here is a three way to finish things off here. We got Ezekiel Tovar, who's coming off a down season but still super young. Maybe we see a bounce back. He's way much higher than this last year's ADP is 219. You got JJ Weatherholt, another youngster, ADP 221, but actually appears to have a starting job, unlike Connor Griffin.
Correct.
And then you have Otto Lopez, the bus driver, with an ADP of 227. I like and dislike all three of these guys, if that makes sense. Like, there's definitely worlds where I see these. I like some more than others. We talked about Otto quite a bit. I'm starting to fall in love with JJ Weatherholt, knowing he will play. And then there's Ezekiel Tovar, which I just don't know what to do with him. Again, drafted so much higher last year, so I think the skills might be better, but are they, is the question. Where are you at on these three guys?
Yeah, it's close. I'm probably Tovar, Otto, Weatherholt. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably just not taking Weatherholt, to be completely honest with you. You know, again, like I said, I kind of pulled up Fangraphs projections, was using Oopsie. Tovar, you know, homers 21, steals 9, runs and RBIs 80-80. Lopez is 12-18, 70-60, and Weatherholt 14-12, 60-60. You know, so, and some of that's playing time, right? Obviously, Tovar is projected for the most at-bats. You know, Otto's projected for more than Weatherholt. Rookie, you never know, right? Could struggle, could succeed. They should play him. They're a young team. They're not doing anything this season. They should just play him, period. But, yeah, I don't know. Tovar, the profile's not great. You know, doesn't do anything really well, but he plays in Coors. And he gets that added boost. And he gets a huge BABIP boost when he plays there. That'll keep his batting average up. You know, hits at the top of the lineup. You know, you just – crappy guys in Coors are still in Coors. You know, it's just – you know, it's an argument we've been making for a long time. And they just happen to be an extremely terrible baseball team the last couple of years. And they're not getting any better anytime soon. But – guys still have to play. They still have to hit. And that ballpark, it's not a homer boost ballpark, but it's a massive batting average boost just because it's so huge. That just the outfield is massive. It's so expansive. And, you know, I think it's Tovar. Again, I don't love it, but if he falls into the 220, 225 range and you need an MI, I think he's good. You know, Otto Lopez, I think there's some upside there. You know, we may not have seen what his best season can be. I do think Tovar is just essentially 2010, 80-80. And Weatherholt's a big unknown. But again, it's like Connor Griffin, not taking the guy. I'd rather probably take McGonagall if I thought he was going to get a job.
Ask you about him.
So. You know, and he's going way later. And maybe if he even doesn't have a job and you don't have any injured guys and you aren't taking any other specs during your draft, you know, maybe you try and pop McGonagall and sit on him for a month and see if he gets called up. I mean, the Tigers are going to be good. They're going to score a lot more runs than the Cardinals are. So, yeah. And again, I think, you know, lineup order matters, right? I mean, you know, Tovar's going to be in the top two. You know, Weatherholt, he's probably going to be in the bottom three. And then, you know, Otto, they got him, I think, slated for fifth or sixth on roster resource he's right
in
now.
Middle of the order. Yeah.
You know, that's a good spot. And they have a good lineup. I think They're another team whose win projection has gone up a couple from the beginning of the season till now. And, you know, they won 76 games last year, something like that. And I think they're projected for somewhere around 74, 75 again this year. I just remember they won more than the Braves, which was like one of the most shocking things. I remember looking at the end of the season. Could have won a lot of money making that speculative bet. But, yeah.
Might happen again this year.
It might. Jeez, the Braves are snake bit. It's crazy.
Yes, it's wild. Yeah, I'm with you. That's why it's a tough one for me. Like Tovar, yeah, he might be the 2010 guy. I think the average is going to be so much better in that park. But like Otto, I like the most out of the group. I know I'm biased here, but I feel like the floor is really good. I don't know if we've seen the best of Otto Lopez just yet. And then Weatherholt, I only have one share. Like I'm loving the profile. I'm loving the fact he's playing. I struggle to take rookies. It's just my world I live in. And to your point with McGonagall, I agree. I think his skill set's the best. I know people say Griffin's the second coming. I think McGonagall might be the best out of the three, personally. I just think he has the least playing time. Except it's so silly. It's like, you're really going to let Zach McKinstry play over this kid? Like, that's what we're doing right now.
Agreed.
But again, it goes back to your Connor Griffin thing. It's a business, and here we are. So, yeah, but like, McGonagall's ADP is 280, so you could take him with one of your last picks and play that game, because I don't think he's down for long. But then again, we've said that before as well. So he shouldn't be, but we don't make those decisions. Any late targets of interest besides maybe a McGonagall, if you're digging deep at the position? I know you mentioned Swanson's kind of your drop off. Like, does Mason Wynn intrigue you? Is there anything down there?
Mason Wynn price, you know, your man crush from last year.
It's a very tempting price to get me back in. I'll tell you that much.
It's pretty good. It's kind of hard not to say yes at that price. In the Waxman draft on Friday, he took JJ Weatherholt in round 17, which I told him I thought was a reach.
It's a little rich. Yeah.
He got Mason Wynn in round 28. At the end of round 28. Like, I mean, what is that?
That's that up.
Pick 330? Something like that?
Let me check this out here.
336.
It's the lowest in the last 20 drafts.
Yeah.
I pull up the draft tracker. Yeah, that's nuts. He's got as high as 233 and as low as 336 over the last 20 drafts.
Yeah, and he was talking about it. You know, I was not really paying attention because it was around 28. But I remember him saying something. He's like, this guy should just not be here. He's like, I don't need him. I already have two shortstops, but this guy shouldn't be around right now. And, you know, it was Wynn. I was like, that's could be good. I mean, that could be Otto Lopez, right? Could be 15 for Jeremy 100%. Pena. Could be 15, 20, you know, with a 275 average, you know, decent counting stats. I assume he's going to lead off or bat second. You know, I'm not paying too much attention to the St. Louis offense, because like I said, I think it's terrible. I don't think I am, but you know, for me, if you're going way late and you've just completely punted MI or everybody else got pushed up, he'd be my target. I'm not taking Correa. I'm not taking Colson Montgomery. Nobody else farther down the list for sure.
But a quick question from the chat here, Woody, our buddy Sean Gavin says, I know you're not a big DC guy, but he's wondering, what are your thoughts on Nassim Nunez? People love him. Don Rillo loves him. So many guys love Nassim Nunez. I haven't taken many shares of Nunez, but he's obviously more of a DC 15 team play, but he should potentially be the starting shortstop for the Nationals.
Yeah, he should. Again, not really somebody I've had to worry about. He doesn't even get drafted in 12s, really. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the ADP tracker, there should be like massive gaps between the blue dots as to what drafts he actually gets taken in. And it's got to be everything probably pretty late between 325 and 360, if I had to guess. He's a speed play, period. I don't think he does a lot else. You know, maybe there's a chance he moves up to the front of the order. You know, and then you definitely get some found money there with him leading off. But otherwise, I think it's a pretty punchless bat that's going to bat in the bottom half of a pretty bad Nationals lineup, you know, in their 7, 8, 9. You know, I think it's Nunez, Jacob Young, and somebody else. And like those guys might combine for 6 homers, you know?
Yep.
So I just probably speed play. I don't think it's really anything other than that. But you know, I did see some odds for him on, you know, stolen base leaders, you know, and he's top 4, top 5 favorite. And like, so, you know, he's up there with the guys who are going to steal, you know, 40 bags, you know, at least according to Vegas, you know, some of the odds I've seen for, you know, stolen base leader for the ML.
Well, yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's crazy. Cause like, say Oopsie's got him for 65 games with 25 steals. Like,
yeah.
So project, to your point, you've fabricated a full season out of that. We're talking 50, 60 steals potential. Obviously, we can't play that game, but you know what I'm trying to get to here.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I can run wild, to your point.
He's fast. And again, team context, the Nationals, they run, you know, it's an organizational philosophy with a bunch of young guys. No one has the red light really. So I think they just run. That's another reason I like Abrams. You know, I think they just let the guys run unless you start getting caught at a pretty high clip. You know, they're still going to let you get after it. And they need to manufacture runs. Their offense isn't very good. You know, they've got James Wood and he's got power and Dylan Cruz. We'll see. You know, it's all young guys. You know, they just, they don't have any established vets. They don't have a real good top to bottom. So, you know, maybe they just start messing with the lineup to see if they can get some, you know, some streaks going, you know, with hitting, or just, you know, find something that gels. And, you know, maybe they rattle off 8 or 10 wins and they keep it together. But I just think the likelihood of that is really low. So not a guy I'm on, but I'm aware, obviously. And he's a guy I'll probably have on my radar for fab if I fall behind in steals.
For sure.
I know I have a couple teams I'm light in steals. So it's like, you know, maybe he's an ad during the first run if I have an injury or two, and just try and, you know, get 20 steals, you know, out of him in the first 2 months if I have to play him that long, and then just throw him away for someone who hits, you know, 20 homers, and just try to, you know, kind of create a player with a combination of stats.
For sure. At SMMS79 asks, is Joey Ortiz an okay middle infielder in a 15 team league? I'm not a massive Joey Ortiz guy. I think expectations for Joey Ortiz was much more than what we're getting from Joey Ortiz.
So he just did absolutely nothing last year. Yeah, he was so bad last year with some expectations of being decent, and he just took a massive, massive step backwards. I don't know. I think it's hard to put your faith in him. I think you can do better.
Yeah, I'd rather take chances elsewhere. I'd rather take a rookie than probably
Joey
Ortiz. At that point.
Yeah. At that point, I would too. I agree.
All right. Well, Brandon, we went through it. We talked shortstops. Any final thoughts on the position before we wrap things up?
No. This was fun. I enjoyed it. Looking forward to my next couple drafts, whenever those may be. And, you know, it's always good to talk it out and kind of feel out what you're try to confirm your priors or, you know, kind of reevaluate your position. Where you are on guys. I feel like I'm pretty confident in who I'm taking and who I'm staying away from. And I'm drafting exactly who I'm talking about. And you can look at my teams and draft boards. And if you guys want me to send you stuff, you can request them on Twitter. I usually post my draft boards throughout the year, but I just haven't this year just from lack of time. But if you want to know who I'm on, you want to interact on Twitter, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to chat baseball. That's pretty much all I post. I don't stay away from the political stuff. I don't do any personal stuff on there. I just like talking fantasy baseball during draft season. And that keeps me smiling, keeps me happy, and keeps my phone from blowing up with all kinds of angry messages. So if you like doing that stuff, feel free to reach out. I also love doing underdog drafts. I'm hot and heavy in all their contests over there. And I just love baseball, man. It's my favorite.
Yep. Always fun chatting with you. I'll have to do it more often throughout the season and see where things are going. And I'll probably see you in some 12-team streets here in a few weeks when things pick up. But again, everybody, if you want to follow him on Twitter, it's at the Human Rain Delay. It's the HumanRandLay. So you're missing some letters, folks, so pay attention. But Human Rain Delay over there, and follow Brandon Waddell. Check it out. Always good stuff. Very knowledgeable in the game of baseball and fantasy baseball. So thanks for joining me, man. Really appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me. Always a good time. Thanks, Bubba.
No problem, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 838. Catch y'all next time.